So we will be speaking with Mary Nicol with Greenpeace once again, a little late coming up later in the program. But right now, we are extremely fortunate to speak to Adam Gill. He is the director of the Public Safety Performance Project with the Pew Charitable Trust. And we are going to be considering today federal drug sentencing policy and how it is destroying generation after generation. Good morning, Mr. Gill. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good morning, Chris, and thank you for your interest in this important topic.
Oh, we are. This is something that has been very much on the radar here at KBOO for a long time now. We have a program. We have programs from prisons. We have programs that address head on the damage that our current drug sentencing policies have inflicted on the communities who are least able to defend themselves. And this is a generational thing, too. Can you talk a bit? The Pew Charitable Trust that came out with a report, and I'd like you to briefly go over what that report found. And some of this is an environmental question. As we face global climate change, we forget that it's not climate, it's our environment that is changing. It is becoming harsher and harsher in so many ways, and it is all interconnected. First, though, the report. What was found?
Yeah, Chris, the report paints a picture of a policy that has gone off the rails. And it costs taxpayers billions and billions of dollars, but has very little to show for all that money in terms of public safety. We found that drug offenders are spending much more time behind bars. In fact, the sentence length for drug offenders over the past 30 years or so has gone up by 36%, while sentences in the federal system for violent offenders and other offenders has actually gone down. And that probation, which used to go to about 26% of federal drug offenders, now has fallen down to 6%. And so when you combine those trends, we now have over half the federal prison population, right about half, that consists of drug offenders, and that system costs taxpayers $7 billion a year. Yet, we also found that illegal drugs remain widely used throughout the country and readily available. And a bottom line conclusion was that if Amazon or Apple had a business unit performing like this, they'd have shut it down years ago.
It's indeed, and from any angle, it is utterly indefensible. That it seems that there's no reason for it. Your study found, what are the reasons for it? It seems that it has the exact opposite effect. It certainly hasn't changed in any way or improved in any way the lives of the people who are affected by it. How do they defend it?
Well, you have to realize that most of these federal laws were passed back in the 1980s when drugs were ravaging communities across Oregon and the nation. They really were. There was a tremendous amount of violence and that stemmed from the drug trade. And I think there were a lot of very well-intentioned folks who thought that they needed to do something about this. And you could make an argument that back then the penalties weren't sufficient for major traffickers. And so in 84 and 86 and 88, Congress did pass a series of laws and sentencing guidelines that increased the punishment for major traffickers. The problem was that over the years, these laws and the general attitude turned into one that made this net a lot bigger than it was originally intended to be. So these stiffer federal penalties were supposed to punish major traffickers and deter people from getting into the narcotics trade at that high level. But unfortunately, we got the punishment part, but not the deterrence.
And it seems, too, to me that one big question, of course, is the major traffickers don't seem to, even they're not even in the sort of cushy club-fed type of prisons. It's only low-level people. It's only low-level street dealers use it. And it's a generational thing, it seems to me. It also seems to me, and that's what I would like to know about this, what the, you know, if I didn't find it in there, but I'm sure it is there. I didn't have a chance to read the report as thoroughly as I would like to. But what going forward, it has to stop because it's destroying communities, and it is getting much worse, not better. What can be done? What is being done? Or yourself, of course, but many other people are standing up and advocating on behalf of the people who are most affected by this. And it also seems to me that there are other agendas at work beneath those that you have mentioned, that this is not as simple as it would appear to be on the surface. But so what can actually be done to address some of the underlying forces that have created the problem in the first place?
Right. Chris, you have two things going on there.
Yes,
and
I'll address them both. At least two.
The first major point that you're making was about sort of who's in the federal system. I just wanted to say quickly that if you do look at our report, which is at our website, which is pewtrusts.org, you can see the breakdown of what level folks are in the federal system. And you will find that the most recent data on this is that about half of them are street-level dealers or below. Including 23%, almost a quarter, who were couriers, and almost 5% who were mules. So that's pushing up towards 30% who are couriers or mules. On the other end of the spectrum, about 11% are high-level suppliers or importers, another 3% organizers or leaders. So everybody might draw the line between major and not as serious trafficker in different places, but we look at it about half the people are sort of major dealers, and the other half are less serious involved. The second question you're asking is what can be done about it, and it's terrific to be speaking with you there in Portland today, because Oregon is a state that is really showing the rest of the country in many ways how, in fact, we should have a different approach. You may be aware that a couple of years ago, the state undertook a justice reinvestment initiative. And the point of that was to say that prison really should be for serious chronic violent offenders, and that for lower level offenders, especially those who have drug problems, they should be steered into more effective and less expensive alternatives. And so Oregon did a number of things in law to change the penalties for drug offenders.
Hang on, just a minute. I've got a signal from engineer. I'm out of time for this portion of the conversation. I'd like to invite you back and continue what we've been talking about. I have to stop right here though, and ask you if you can just let listeners know the website to go to get some of this information. We want everybody to be up to speed on this, because we are going to be inviting Mr. Gell back on the show. Because this is an incredibly interesting report. There's a lot in it, a lot of other issues to consider, families, for example, and how they're affected by these draconian laws. Could you just, though, before we let you go, give the listeners the website so they can access to find out more?
Sure. Direct to our website is pewpublicsafety.org.
And that'll take you right there. Listeners, have a look at that. The report is detailed and very, not necessarily everything you might expect, fascinating. And I want to thank Adam Gill, my guest this morning, for joining us. Thanks so much, Adam. We really appreciate your time here. We go next to Cassidy Shaw. Mary Nicol with Sharp, with Mary Nicol with Greenpeace. She's been a guest on the show before, bringing us a little update on Obama's grandstanding a circus up in Alaska. Good morning, Mary. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Well, this is certainly the ultimate hypocrisy. Again, this is an utterly indefensible action and a slap in the face to all the people who worked incredibly hard, and to stop the drilling in the Arctic, and only to see the president sign off on it. You want to talk a bit about what Greenpeace's response has been?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you said it well. You know, right now the President Obama is not living up to his climate legacy. So on the one hand, he's doing good things like putting in place the Clean Power Plan and rolling that out. But on the other hand, he's giving Shell the approval to drill off the coast of Alaska for oil. And so this week, what you're seeing is essentially a PR blitz from the Obama administration heading to Alaska to talk with the people who are on the front lines of climate change, while at the same time he's approving more of the oil drilling that has caused climate change globally for all of us.
And First Nations people up in Alaska are outraged. This is at Obama's arrogance in thinking that he can come in there in his jet plane and expect people to be thrilled that Denali has been officially named Denali. What's the response been that you've heard? We're going to be having First Nations representatives on the show, but what have you heard so far from representatives of First Nations who are watching this unfold?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the first time a sitting president has visited Alaska. So I from locals there that I've heard from, that folks are excited that he's coming to the state, but certainly are, eager to see more from him in terms of leadership on climate, on issues that impact, communities that still live off the land. And so I'm glad you're having someone from a First Nations on first to speak to that directly.
And let's not forget, it's possible to see Russia from Alaska, so at least they'll be able to keep their eye on Russian operations in the Arctic, right? Hey, Greenpeace is active up there also. People up there are going to be taking a stand. How is this going to motivate people? I mean, have we seen? I looked through. I didn't see a great deal of protests yet.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, as you probably know, the politics around oil in Alaska are incredibly diverse, but the folks that are working as hard as they can to make sure to stop the most detrimental impacts of climate change have come together quite strongly around this, and they're planning a rally that's happening today as the president is meeting with world leaders to talk about issues of climate change, and they'll be outside of that rallying with a few hundred other folks from across the state and across the region who really do care about saving the planet and stopping the most detrimental impacts of climate change.
Thank you so much for that, Mary. Really appreciate you joining us at short notice. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, August 31st, 2015. Kate Welch engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lights, Camera, Action, making video easy on Wednesday, September 2nd, 6 p.m. at Portland Community Media. Lights, Camera, Action, a collaboration between PDX Tech for Good and Portland Community Media, this seminar will show you how to make high-quality video for